You're listening to a special edition of The Briefing on Monocle Radio, recorded live on the 6th of March at the Sustainable Cities in Action Forum 2024 at Expo City Dubai.
Hello and welcome to this special briefing coming to you from the Nexus here at Expo City Dubai. I'm Tom Edwards. This is the last of our series of special editions of the show where Monocle's reporting on the critical themes raised here at the Sustainable Cities in Action Forum 2024. Today in our third and final broadcast, we're exploring the living city, asking what happens at the meeting point of technology and passive methods in urban development, what this means for design and sustainability in truly human intuitive cities. We're joined by a panel of outstanding guests. Farah Naz, innovation and ESG lead at Aecon Middle East. Farah is an award-winning climate change strategist and author of a number of books in the space, including one for kids, which is super interesting, which we'll talk about. We also welcome TV, Associate Urban Planner and Middle East Sustainability Leader at Arup. He's worked on all kinds of key projects, Aldar Net Zero Plan, the decarbonisation roadmap for Dubai airports as well, and others, and also Juan Carlos Veloso, founder of Future Places, a senior strategic advisor at Gratia Advisory, an expert in enhancing the image and development of locations all around the world, and Andrew Tuck, Monocle's editor-in-chief, is here as well. Let's kick things off. Farah, talk to me a little bit about communicating complex ideas with clarity. I guess if you write a book for kids, right, that's the embodiment of that challenge. And in a way, this is where we have to start the conversation, right, with how we're framing this narrative to the youngest generation.
So I've been working in as an engineer and climate for 20 years. I've been in the region for the last 8 years. And 2 years ago, I wrote a book called Net Zero City. It was a compilation of 112 case studies across the globe, my ideas of decarbonization and what we can do. I partnered with Langdon Morris, who is an innovation consultant. And what we did is we made Net Zero very simple for everybody, generalist. The book is written for generalist by an engineer and a management consultant, so you can imagine how simplified we went. But the reason I wrote that book is to make it easy for people to understand where they are in different walks of life and what they can do to contribute. For me, net zero and decarbonization is an ownership challenge rather than a technological challenge, rather than a human challenge. So once I wrote that book, we sold 10,000 copies globally and all this. But then people started inviting me, and children, schools started inviting me. So I started going to school and talking to children about climate change. And I started talking about food, energy, and water nexus, because in this part of the world, the relationship we have with food, energy, and water is interrelated. And many of our decarbonization strategies have to look at these three components very closely, not just energy. So I started explaining it to children, 10 to 13-year-old, and they got it for 7.5 minutes. I simplified it. I timed myself. And I remember coming out of that session saying, I need to write a book about this. So I did a Google search, couldn't find any books. And I said, okay, I'm going to go and write a book. So the book is called Mission Zero. It talks about food, energy, and water nexus. It shows children the interconnectivity and interdependencies of climate science, made it in a very simple way. The idea is that they are our future leaders, and hopefully we will leave a better world, but also for them to understand where the responsibility lies and the ownership. So this was launched during COP28. Now, as AECOM, I was delivering COP28 as a carbon neutral event for the UAE government, so I did not plan writing and publishing a book and delivering COP28 as a carbon neutral event. As life happens, you don't plan these things. Disasters and work pressures just comes together. So it was fortunate that we launched this book and the UAE Pavilion. It inspires children, but the idea is that parents will be reading with them and creating that co-creative relationship of having those conversations at home. So that's the idea of the book.
Well, and I think there's something really interesting looking at these areas of interconnectedness. And I wanted to ask you about this, because we were having a conversation before about the social impacts of technology and some of the concerns in this space. And it is really interesting, the pressures which are operating there. They're kind of glacial in some ways. Tell me why that's an area of interest, given your expertise, and particularly in that social manifestation, why there are so many unanswered questions that actually we shouldn't shy away from when we're discussing these broader themes.
Yeah, I think it's the social bit is important for me for a number of reasons. One of them is just being an urban planner. For me, that's a starting point. I mean, we're planning for people, so we've got to understand the people we're working with, the people we're planning for. So that's the first bit. The other bit is, as a sustainable development advisor, I've always looked at sustainable development with its three kind of components, key components, you know, the social, the environmental, and the economic. And I know we need to do a lot more on the environmental side of things, but I think we need to do even more than that on the social side of things. And that's why I kind of taken it upon myself to try and push that a little bit further than currently it is, because it's quite fundamental. Obviously, the economic side of things is quite important, but I think it's taken care of to a certain extent by its own forces, so to speak. So yeah, so that's kind of where I'm coming from with the social bit. And again, I think it is the most important, from my perspective, element, because at the end of the day, you know, we want to have to deal with climate change and all its issues, but we, in principle, want to do that because we want to protect, in addition to Earth, we want to protect ourselves as communities at the end of the day, right? We talk about vulnerable people, we talk about people with low income, and improving the quality of life of people, right? That's what, you know, one of the fundamental objectives of sustainable development is improving the quality of life for people, not just the people who live here today, but future generations as well, right? So at the end of the day, the core of sustainability and sustainable development and cities, from my perspective, is people. And that's why the social dimension, the social aspect of it is quite critical. Yeah, so engaging different groups within the community, and we talk a lot about inclusivity and community cohesion and, you know, all very important aspects, but I think we need to be doing more on that on the ground, especially as we plan cities, as we look at different groups within the communities. I was mentioning earlier in one of the sessions, you know, the affordable side of things. You know, affordability is a quite important aspect. People move to the cities because they want better livelihoods. So we need to keep that in mind and plan cities to accommodate that, to give people that, right? More people that. Yeah, I mean, I can think of some of the sort of elements that we put together, you know, can help us with that sort of process. And I would start by first understanding the people we're planning for. And that's where data is quite critical. And again, it's been a topic that's been discussed widely during the past, well, today and yesterday. And I think rightly so, because we do need data to understand more about the people we're working with. And by data, just don't mean the hard numbers. I also mean engaging with those people, because we can learn much more about their lives and their issues. And then that will be much more sort of useful information to have when we're planning. Yeah, so I'll pause here. We can keep going on for a while.
And Juan Carlos, let me bring you in here, because along with that deep data, that deeper engagement, one of the other themes that keeps cropping up is this idea of building meaningful cooperation, collaboration. And in your work, obviously, I think I mentioned, you know, it has involved working with lots of different international initiatives, forums, organizations, development agencies, EU, and so on and so forth. How much of a challenge is reframing and rephrasing your usual narratives as you move amongst all those different stakeholders, because their rigor, their demands, their habits are so different? And that's a challenge from the outset, presumably.
Well, as you mentioned, I worked in Barcelona for many, many years, advised the city, but then I started advising other places, from Latin America to Russia, to Siberia, to China, Vietnam. So I think the first lesson is, and you mentioned that before, is you have to understand the place, their culture, their values, their behaviors. We're talking about cities in engagement. People engage in different ways in different cities, even in different neighborhoods. So I think The challenges maybe are global in a way. We're talking about sustainability, but the way they are focused locally is very different. Like, let's say Barcelona, we have the challenge with tourism, but our challenge is with over-tourism. How would we make sustainable the model? How would we bring back the city to the citizens? Because we have the feeling sometimes that I'm not going to go to down to Barcelona because there's plenty of tourists. So I lost my city. While if you go to other places, they want tourists. You cannot tell them, no, don't bring tourists. Just bring quality. Yes, but in a way, you have to understand their culture and why, and adapt the narrative and adapt the methodologies and the knowledge to the local situation, even if the challenges are global. I think locally they are very different.
Juan Carlos, can I jump in? Juan Carlos said something early on in his panel, which I thought was it kind of scared me a little bit. You said you were talking about the future and about technology, and you said, well, maybe the way we plan cities now, we shouldn't be worrying about people having town squares to go to because actually people now connect on their devices. That feels a little bit dystopian to me. And I wonder when we're making cities that actually if, of course it's not universal, these things, but the desire to be among other people, even if you're not going to have a conversation with them, that the notion that you're in proximity to other people who are different to you, I almost feel is universal. Are you really convinced that people, when we're talking about sustainable communities, that people don't want these human interactions?
Well, maybe I didn't mention that this is going to happen, but I see the trends, especially with young population, engaging each other, even if they are physically connected, engaging through their mobiles and having connections through the social media. So I'm not saying that we're going to lose this idea of places where we can gather, but we have to understand how are they going to relate to each other and what we do need to provide to make this engagement and these places for them to come.
We'll bring the others in, but I wonder whether, I know when we go around the world is, that everyone tells me what young people think, and I'm always surprised that actually they're much more complicated than you imagine, that yes, they're very good at this high-speed world, but they're also good at this slow world, that if you go to many of the big museums and art installations and these moments of actually often quite high culture, the people wandering around taking them in are often young people. So is it that we need to rethink those spaces to have other levels of engagement, do you think?
I think we need to rethink the spaces, having in consideration who's going to use these spaces or who's the audience. And then specifically for younger audiences, we need to understand what are the challenges and the trends.
I think there's lots of people wanting to jump in here.
Yeah, I'm inclined to say we shouldn't necessarily say it's a bad thing not to want to be around people. If somebody wants that, why not, right? It's their call. We shouldn't be telling them what they should want. But equally, I guess, as a planner, I always think about choices. I think that's the fundamental bit from quality of life perspective. Quality of life isn't to tell people what is good quality of life for them is or should be. It's to give them choices that then they can pick from and experience what they would like to experience and feel satisfied that this is a good quality of life that I have. Now, whether that means I have tourists or I don't, I go to school in person or I study online, it's really up to them. The way I see it, our job is, as at least planners and city makers, is to create those opportunities or choices for people, for them to pick and choose whatever they want. My guess is they're going to try out a number of things and then find out what they really want. And probably that will evolve and change over time as they grow older and in different phases of their lives. So I think it's variety, it's choices that's a fundamental part of the definition of quality of life, as I understand it.
So I agree in different levels with these two and disagree in different levels. But for me, linking the choices with the experiences of the spaces is what we need to rethink. For example, people would go to a park to see the bird chirping or look at the sky. Now people go to the park and they connect via laptop because they're doing their courses on laptop or digital classes. So what we're finding is that choices linked with different type of experiences. The experience is not linear in one space, it's multidimensional. And recognizing that and creating those space which is quite multidimensional but in a singular dimensional world, I think that's where the trick of the trade is. And we are doing that, all of us, in different way. There's a park, it's a first net zero park in Masdar. A few years ago, if somebody would ask me how can a park become net zero, I would question myself. But then delivering a net zero park with a group of people in the Masdar city, we all learned that a park, how do we approach the idea of nature-based solution, park, from an energy, water, experience perspective. And that process actually made all of us to learn and rethink the way we experience a park or the experience of a park.
And I think, if I may just add, like it's, again, it links to some of the points raised earlier this morning on some of the panels, which is the systems thinking and the complexity of the object we're dealing with, right? I mean, in this case, I mean, we're talking about cities, which are, you know, extremely complex, just the physical side of them, but then add on top of that, or, you know, before that, us, you know, a very complex system, you know, social system, people. We are complex, let's face it. So I think that complexity requires the diversity, the choices, and the variety and, you know, the multitude of experiences and so on, because all that richness that different cultures, you know, bring to the table will be looking for very different also experiences, different ways of experiencing things, different ways of interacting with each other, but also with objects and spaces and places and all the rest of it. I mean, for me personally, that's what is quite fascinating about cities, right? It is complex and we're complex. And so the possibilities are infinite, right? So, I mean, somebody mentioned earlier today, imagination, you know, we need to imagine. And I mean, it was talking about the urban future. I mean, there you go. You've got a lot of opportunities to imagine possibilities.
It makes your job more difficult, of course, doesn't it? Let's just briefly, I wanted to touch on this idea, and it made me think when you described that, the sort of net zero part, Farah, where we are in this convergence of, you know, technology, cutting edge, and passive, these non-technical, technological, indigenous solutions. Where are we in that journey? It's a theme, again, we've returned to often. And is there jeopardy there? Are we still misunderstanding what that convergence looks like, and both what the challenge and opportunity is that happens at that meeting point?
So the misunderstanding exists, and I think that's where architects, urban planners, engineers, and sustainability consultants needs to come together to create that systems thinking framework. And the reason why I use the word systems thinking is because, I will give you an example. In order to do a decarbonization, a net zero city, for example, we have to start with people, passive ideas, solutions, and gradually go into the technology. Nowadays, what we see is that we do a technology roadmap with clients to show them where do you actually need technology and where you can go with passive solution without technology. What that provides the clients is a business plan of where they need to invest, when they need to invest, and what technologies can actually enhance people's way of being. So the business plans nowadays are not just a financial business plans. It's an energy strategy aligned with the business case, which has a technology roadmap, an innovation roadmap. You spoke about social aspects. Social sustainability and social innovation are merging together because we require those technologies to enhance the experience of people. And then once that's experienced, it becomes, an experience, but it's a social innovation because it made people think that problem or that challenge or that experience in a bit different way. So now what we're seeing is this merge of technology roadmap, innovation roadmap, sustainability roadmap are merging together to create a proper business case for sustainability. So yes, there is a lot of confusion, but it has already existed and it will always be. Because it's a bit confusing because you need four different experts to come together to create one thing. But I think that's the challenge and the fun part of built environment, because you know that you have to co-create. So that's where the collaboration and the co-creation comes, because you really have to co-create in a clever way to create a solution.
Quickly, go on.
Yeah, I was just going to add, I think I see some really good examples of where the two are meeting, the local and the technology, the passive rather, and the active systems merging together, not just at the systems level as in cooling or heating, but also in the whole planning. I mean, we are in a place that's planned differently to many other parts of the city. I mean, we should be very proud of what's happened here. Masdar is another good example where you can see some very good practices that adopted the passive design strategies, passive planning strategies, before getting to the technology side of things. And both those very good examples do have technologies. Dubai Expo have a smart system, right? Smart city system, MindSphere, that kind of gathers data across the city. So it's kind of almost the high end on the technology side. But they didn't do that, right? Kind of, that is the only thing we're doing. It's just technology. Before that, the whole planning of the development, the site itself, and that was from day one, and I mean, we were involved in that process as well as, you know, the Arab and others. There was thinking not just around how we lay out the different building blocks and how they're going to shade each other and how we're going to have all these, you know, shaded spots so people can wander around even when it's hot and create those wind tunnels that are created by the geometry of the form. I mean, there's a lot to talk about, but I guess the point is I'm much more optimistic today than I was 10, 15 years ago, before this was built and many other examples emerged. So yeah, I mean, I think we're getting there.
Well, I'm glad that you struck an optimistic note on which to close. And regular listeners to Monocle know that we keep things snappy. So just quickly, Andrew, let me throw back to you. We're wrapping up this third of our special sessions. Just share with us, just in brief, a couple of takeaways. There's been a few narratives that have been really arresting, obviously, over the last couple of days. What are a couple of things that you're going to take away, do you think, from our conversation so far?
I think lots of great conversations over the last couple of days. And a few of the things that will stick with me are, one, put yourself in other people's shoes. Don't start all your planning decisions just from your own experience. And we've seen that from all sorts of people on stage over the last few days who just came to problems with a different perspective. Employ kids. I think this has come up again and again, is that actually, if you really want community engagement, start with the youngest in your communities, because they are active and they're good at putting pressure on their parents as well, I think. Simple fixes can often be the most important. Shade. How many times has the simple word shade come up? Shade gets kids to school. Shades allows women to go to work. Shades protects people from extreme heat. And in all of these contexts, I think that's one of the amazing things. And finally, come together. You know, what an extraordinary event to be at, just where you see across lunch so many people who didn't know each other a day ago exchanging ideas and cards and practices and already finding solutions to go forward. So those are just a few of my takeaways.
Not bad, Andrew, not bad. That is all we have time for on this edition of The Briefing. Thanks to all the amazing crew, of course, here at Expo City Dubai, and to our brilliant panel. But that is this edition of The Briefing wrapped up. I'm Tom Edwards. Thank you for listening.
That was the final special edition of The Briefing on Monocle Radio, brought to you from the 2024 edition of the Sustainable Cities in Action Forum at Expo City Dubai. Thanks to all the amazing crew there, our wonderful hosts, and thanks to our producer and editor, Sam Impey. Find all the special episodes and reports from Monocle Radio at the forum on Monocle Radio by heading to monocle.com or listening via Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can find out more about the human-centric city of the future by heading to expocitydubai.com. I'm Tom Edwards. Thanks for listening.